welcome to the Learning Show on 103.2 Dublin City FM. It's the show to encourage, support and help people improve both their working and personal lives through continuous learning. I'm Laura Fitzsimons and I'm a training and presenting coach. And today I'm going to be talking to the director of the Irish Academy of Public Relations. So I'd like to extend a warm welcome to Ellen Gunning.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, how are you doing? Thank you very much for coming in this afternoon.
Delighted to be here.
So I know you're a very busy lady, so I really appreciate you giving up the time to come in to talk to me on the Learning Show here today. So tell me, give me a little bit of background to the Irish Academy of Public Relations.
The Irish Academy was formed in 1992, so we're around quite a while. I actually formed my first business in 1985. And in 1992, I formed a public relations consultancy.
Okay.
And when I was working in the public relations consultancy, I got involved, as you do, in the Public Relations Institute. And I started to lecture. And eventually, by 1992, I felt that I'm a Dub.
Okay.
But I felt that the only course you could do at the time was in Dublin. You couldn't do a course outside the country and you could outside the county and you couldn't do anything other than a certificate or a diploma course. There wasn't a short course. My background was in voluntary groups, in charities, in Vincent de Paul and Ontashka, and in promoting the different kind of good things that they were doing.
Yeah.
And really at the time, all I had been looking for when I studied public relations was a short course, something that would give me the nuts and bolts of publicity. So in 1992, I thought, well, I'll create the academy. And we'll provide those courses. And it just took off from there,
wow.
Literally.
Okay, so your courses then, when you started off, you're looking for a short course. What did you start off? What was the duration of the first?
First course was a certificate in public relations, which ran for about 8 weeks, I think one night a week.
Okay.
And we literally then, since 1992, we've expanded that into really all of the areas of communication that I happen to be interested in.
Okay.
I refuse to teach anything that I'm not interested in.
I don't even teach it,
right? But I have to get out of bed in the morning being excited about whatever it is we're doing. So we teach public relations, journalism, event management, print journalism and radio journalism. We teach online marketing. We've just introduced three taught courses in presenting skills on radio, presenting skills on television and personal development. And it's a fascinating area and it keeps growing like topsy-turvy.
Yeah.
When we started, we introduced the courses. We were teaching them. So we taught them in UCD in Dublin, UCC in Cork and GMIT in Galway.
Okay.
But as the years went by, you find that we actually had a team at one stage of something like 67 tutors. It was absolute madness altogether. And we had a woman whose job really was just about full time to do all the PRSI and PAYE. And it was nuts. And in the end, we thought, well, why don't we actually change the model somewhat and get colleges to teach our courses on our behalf? So we now have 40 colleges around the country who teach our courses. We call them partner colleges. So they teach our courses. We send them the syllabus. We send them all the lecture aids. We very often help them to find tutors because we actually know the people who are working in the industries in their area who may not actually be teachers. But if you know the stuff, if you're doing PR or you're doing journalism, they're interested
to relate.
In teaching it. So we have those 40. This year, we added two new colleges outside of Ireland, which I was really chuffed with.
Okay, yes, I remember, I read a lot about this. Yeah, go on, tell me.
One was the International E-Learning Academy in Athens in Greece, and the other is Durban Polytechnic in Abuja in Nigeria. And you couldn't get two more different, diverse colleges in your life. In Athens, I love dealing with George Karathanos, the man who runs the college there, and he is just a dote. I really love him. But George rang me at one stage and he said, Ellen, you don't understand that the Greek people, they are on their knees, with apologies to Greek people for my awful Greek accent.
That was very impressive.
The Greek people, they are on their knees. We have the bread, but not the olives. And I said, George, you're talking to the Irish. We have the spuds and no butter. We know where you're coming from.
I love the analogies.
And we just hit it off brilliantly. It's one of the lovely things, I think, about working for yourself, that you can actually choose the people that you link with. So you work with people that you like.
Yeah, no, I can relate to
that. You have no reason
yeah.
to work with people that you don't like. You think, oh, life is too short. You know, they can go away and find somebody else. So he's one guy. And then the other man is Dr. Ben Equeri, and he runs Durban Polytechnic in Abuja, Nigeria. Different character entirely. Very driven by the need to create, to give people, to give his students skills. So skills that they can use. He doesn't teach courses that are academic, and I mean that in the nicest way, but that will give you a qualification in, I don't know, cyber analysis or something, because you can't actually go out in Nigeria and sell that as a skill and make money out of it. But public relations and journalism and event management, you can set yourself up. You can go out there and say, I can write this story. I can organise that event for you. And I was over in March this year And he has three different schools. And one of the schools has children who are about 8 or 9 years of age.
Yeah.
And they're learning how to deconstruct and reassemble computers.
Wow.
And I just thought it was brilliant. Yeah. And they're not learning how to do software programming. They're actually learning how to take computers that we've chucked, which probably have another 20 years in them, and take them apart, put them back together again. And he reckons that's a skill they'll make good money out of. And he's very focused on that.
Practical way of looking at education then, isn't it?
Very.
From an upskilling point of view. And
I was fascinated. He held the first ever event management conference. So he had amazing. I'm such a idiot for travel. Anybody who asks me to travel anywhere is like, I'll go.
So that's why you're here today.
I love traveling. That's it. You did promise me Thailand for a week after the interview, didn't you?
Oh, wow. I think that might have been a dream from last night. No. Sorry to disappoint you now. A cup of coffee is about as far as I can go.
Well, he had actually contacted me and said, why don't you come over to, we're having the first ever event management conference, national event management conference in Abuja. Why don't you come over? And I thought, oh, I'm there. I'm your girl. Definitely. And it also gave me a chance to meet the students. But I was fascinated because I was able to do quite a lot of research through PR contacts about what public relations was like in Nigeria.
Yeah.
Through journalism, because I've been a member of the NUJ for 30 odd years as well, I was able to get a good handle on how journalists operated, but I couldn't find anybody who knew what the event management scene was like in Nigeria. So I was at somewhat of a distance. But when I went over, I was talking to a group and I said to them, so what do you do in event management? What's the hot thing in event management in Nigeria? And they said interior decoration, which really threw me completely.
Interior decoration. What would that to do with?
Yeah, I was exactly there, right? And I'm thinking, okay, interior decoration, wallpapers, paints, exhibitions, maybe. And I said, okay, how does it manifest itself? And actually, what they meant was wedding planner. But they go back another step before wedding planner. You're brought in when the family of the groom are coming over to meet the family of the bride. It's a bit like, what's that thing that they do in? They do it in the country in Ireland, where they there's a mass in a local house each year. Can't remember what they call it. They have a name for it. But literally people would end up saying, ours is the house that they're having the mass in this year. So the whole house is done from top to bottom. And in Nigeria for a wedding, they do exactly the same thing. And then if you've actually managed to do the house up and you've met the groom's family and they're impressed that you're respectable and nice people, you get to handle the wedding. And he felt that was a way that people could start working
really
in event management. I just find this stuff
fascinating. Yeah, that's absolutely amazing. But just stepping back there for a moment and going back to the individual we were talking about in Greece, did you make contact with him or did he make contact with you? Or how did that all come about?
Oh, this is one of the real fun things. I really don't know and I'm not giving you a clever answer. We also have, signed affiliate marketing agreements with Chile and with Uruguay. And we just keep adding countries and places on. And I think it's just that I've become one of those networkers that I gather people over the years.
Yeah.
I keep talking to people and saying, that'd be really interesting. We must stay in touch. And there isn't a fixed way. Do you know the way somebody could tell you, well, I actually identified that market?
That's what I was going to answer. I was looking for it. But look, interesting how you've done it. Organically grown.
Yeah. Most business people, I suppose. I did have a plan insofar as I know that the areas that I want to expand in are the areas where there is a gap. So I want to expand in South America. I want to expand in Russia. I want to expand in Africa. And those are the countries that we've been making links with hugely in the last 18 months. But it probably started 3 years before that.
Yeah.
But it was without, you know, I need to join an organisation that can introduce me to. It was kind of like finding people and adding them on. And actually, by the time I've come to do business with people, it's like I've known them quite well. And it's one of the big challenges, I suppose, that if I'm doing business with you and you're in Ireland, mm-hmm. I can meet you.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I can shake your hand and instantly decide I'm going to work really well with this woman.
Or
I don't like this woman. It's very easy.
Yeah.
But on email or on Skype, it's much more difficult. So it actually takes much longer. So you maybe know people for 18 months or more before you get to the stage where they say, well, OK, now we can have a look at talking about a contract. And very often we've done these pre-contracts, as I call them. They're like memorandums of understanding. We all do MOUs now, of course. So you do this MOU. But my theory was the first MOU that I saw said, basically, my business and your business are going to work together and try to create. And I thought, that's rubbish. That's a letter. So I actually said to the solicitor, no, I want an MOU that says my business and your business are going to work together and you are going to do and I am going to do. And this is the nature of what we're doing. And actually, it's like a pre-contract contract.
Oh, OK, that makes sense.
So once you get to the stage where we've agreed the MOU, I don't think I've signed one MOU, but I've signed probably 8 or 9 contracts, most of which haven't gone public.
So they've actually
sort of
skipped over that. They've seen the MOU.
You've actually negotiated all of the MOU, and then they would say, why don't you just put this into a contract and we go straight to it, rather than put a whole layer in the middle. And that's what we've done.
I have to say, that is amazing. You're a very inspiring individual. I heard you speak recently at the Dubnet network event, and it was just
that was a great night.
I have to say, and fair dues to Angela O'Connor and the lads and everybody for organising that. It was really good, and looking forward to the next one. But I was very, very inspired about what you've to say, and I've known you for the last, for me, almost a year, I suppose, at this stage, on and off, but really interested
in
what you have to say. Maybe, Ellen, if you can give out your contact details before we go to a song break.
I would be absolutely delighted to. The website is www.irishacademy.com.
Okay.
Information from info@irishacademy.com, or pick up the phone and give us a call at 278-0802.
Okay, you're very well rehearsed. I'm here with Ellen Gunning, as you said, the Director of the Irish Academy of Public Relations. Our contact details are, the email address is thelearningshow@dublincityfm.ie, Facebook/thelearningshow, and then Twitter @thelearningshow, and that's capital T, L and S. We're going to take a song break now, listening to one of my favourite singers, Steve Perry, singing You Should Be Happy. Welcome back to The Learning Show on 103.2 Dublin City FM. That was Steve Perry singing You Should Be Happy. And I'm very happy here to have my guest along today, Ellen Gunning. She's the Director of the Irish Academy of Public Relations. So welcome back, Ellen.
Thanks, Laura.
What we were discussing, we're talking about your venture into dealing with different countries and organisations, and bringing your business and what your offerings to those different countries. What I would love to know about, because I'm nosy, but I'm also always very curious, how people overcome challenges when setting up a business and running a business. So what kind of challenges have you faced along the way? You've a lot of experience. You've been in business a long time. You've gone into so many different countries now at this stage, with all the different products and services you're offering. So what kind of challenges did you face along the way?
I suppose one of the greatest challenges, actually, that springs to mind immediately, because I'm fascinated by it, is the dealing with different cultures.
Oh, okay.
So being really conscious, up to about maybe 6 years ago, I would have dealt mostly with people who were in Ireland. So I could do simple things, like I could send an email and say, hi, Laura, no problem, will do.
Okay, right. And we take that. That's fine, Ellen.
And you're saying, that's grand. Yeah. She's on top of it. You know, she'll get it back to me next Wednesday or whatever. But dealing with different cultures, you actually find that you consciously have to slow down and say, I'm now dealing with, where is Laura? Laura is in the Middle East. Okay, so I need to begin with, hello, Laura. Thank you very much for your email. I really appreciate you taking the time to mail me. Let me deal with the issues that you have raised. And it's a completely different.
Much more formal, is it?
It's not even that it's more formal. Some of the cultures are, the Asian cultures particularly, and the English are very formal. The English would never say, hi, Ellen. They'd say, dear Ellen.
Oh, okay.
Always.
Okay.
So you answer them back and say, dear Laura. Lovely to hear from you. But actually, it's more a brain training that says, when it lands at the other side, it's very easy to misinterpret it. You're not dealing with people who think on the same wavelength as you do. So you actually need to look at the fact that maybe they're dealing with a woman in business and they're not familiar with dealing with women in business.
Okay.
They're dealing with somebody for whom their first language is not English. So they're translating what you've said. So if you don't structure the sentences properly, they may read as quite rude and dismissive. Fine, I'll do it. And it could actually be quite negative as opposed to quite positive. So you slow down an awful lot and just become much more conscious of how you communicate. And then other things like going back to the courses that we do, the online courses, you find yourself looking at the examples and looking much more carefully and much more depth about the examples that you use to see, is there anything there that might possibly cause offence? Because you know that there's nothing that would cause offence to an Irish or an English or an American audience.
Yeah.
But what about Africans? What about people? An example, going back to Africa, this cross-cultural thing, I love it. The first day I was at the event management conference, a lady came up to me, and I had been saying, would everybody please talk to me, because I don't want to sit on a table up there. I want to gab, and I want everybody to gab back at me and we can all learn. And a lady who had been in the group after a while said to me, could I ask you a very personal question? And I said, sure, I'm not saying I'll answer it, but sure, ask the question anyway. And she said, can I ask you, I've been admiring your earrings. Could I ask you, what's your religion, please? And I said,
okay, you
really have me floored.
Oh,
I cannot make a connection between earrings
and religion.
Am I reading something the wrong way? And she said, no, you have pierced ears. And in Nigeria, in that particular area of Nigeria, you were either Christian or Muslim.
Okay.
So the fact that I wasn't dressed like a Muslim said that I was a Christian. But she didn't know which sect of Christianity I belonged to, because in Nigeria there are sects which don't allow any ornamentation, like earrings.
Oh my gosh.
And there are sects which do. And that kind of stuff just fascinates me. But it means that you cross-read absolutely everything. And from a tutor's point of view, with the people who write the courses, I end up writing back to them saying, emailing them saying, for example, this became an issue. There is a reference to Heineken sponsor something.
Yeah.
We can't use this in the Middle East. You cannot make reference to beer.
Okay.
So will you go back through? And there may be nothing in there courses at all, but yeah. I end up flashing out an email saying, please have a quick cross check and make sure there's no reference to beer. So you're constantly amending and changing.
Oh my
gosh. And that's fascinating. That's a great challenge,
because
that seems to never end. And then the other big challenge we have, which is entirely my own fault, but I love this stuff, is that we introduced
you can tell that, Ellen, by the way, you're so passionate about what you say. You relay that so well. Well, go on, tell me.
I love the stuff that I do. But the other one is that we teach public relations in 5 different languages.
Yeah.
English, French, Spanish, Polish and Russian. I barely speak English. Okay, I don't speak any of the other languages at all.
You're doing a great job.
But I'm fascinated by the fact that we can teach it, because that just started from the fact that I thought, well, world domination, my 2 favourite words. Okay, so I want to dominate the world. So we look at all the different markets that we can move into. And after we looked at all the different markets, I thought, hang on a minute. All of those markets don't speak English. It's a bit rich to presume that they will. So let's look at the languages that are most spoken and teach in those languages. But we're doing a CSR project at the moment with an organisation that are based in, they're based between Galway and Galicia in northern Spain. And they had asked, I had said that as part of our CSR, what we would do for them, it's an intercultural, interlanguage exchange. It's a fascinating project. And I had said, our contribution would be the media end of things. We would negotiate with the media on their behalf. We would do the promotion. So the first negotiation we had to do was to negotiate with Spanish television, with Galician TV, to see if they would cover a programme that we were about to make. So I arrived in, and my late mother, Lord of Mercy on her, used to say, Ellen has a great ability with languages. And God bless her. I think what she meant was, Ellen is a terrible mimic, right? It isn't an ability with languages. So I arrived in and did my best mimicry when I was meeting this head of television and said, hola, perdone, no español. And she said, oh, perdone, no inglese.
This is going to be fun.
And what I discovered was, it is absolutely amazing. If you're sitting across the table from somebody, the amount of things that you can cover by sign language, and you actually know she's talking about production values. Just explain this little bit to me. So we had a translator there who filled in all of the gaps.
Yeah.
But I would love to have the ability to speak all of the languages. And I actually went back to try and do French again last year. We're dealing with a French company at the moment. And this guy's amazing. I really like him. We started with Madame Gunning, and then it became Bonjour Hélène. And the last email was, ma chère Hélène. And I'm saying, hang on, steady. But he said there's an expression in France, don't ask me what it is, that says you don't have to be serious to do serious business.
Oh, that's nice. I like that, yeah.
But at one stage we were Skyping and he went, blah, 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 blah. So you understood that, didn't you? And I said, perfectly. And he said, you did. And I said, you said I'm the nicest woman you've ever dealt with in business and you're looking forward to dealing with me for years. And he said, no, something like, I said, the sun is shining today. It's a fine day. And I said, no, I prefer my translation. And he said, I do too. And I think actually it's about the people you do business with. If you're doing business with the right people,
yeah,
you can actually overcome. They're challenges maybe, but they're not huge challenges.
Yeah.
You can overcome them. I think it must be different if you're dealing with people who are quite precious. But then it's back to what I was saying earlier.
You,
if
you
they're
work
quite
with
precious,
who you want to work with.
I leave them off working with somebody else.
You know, yeah. I have to say, thankfully, you know, I get on great with all my clients. And I don't think I've had a client that I didn't particularly get on with. But at least you can pick and choose to some extent. Great stories, Ellen. Interesting. And another question I have for you then is about support. What kind of support and assistance did you get, whether from a monetary point of view or support, just even helping you, giving you direction from a mentoring point of view? What did you get any help
over? None is the short answer.
None.
I never went looking for any financial support. So I never looked for investment, although I spoke to investors about what it is they do. But that was more out of a curiosity.
OK,
because I'm actually quite greedy. Greedy is the wrong word. I'm quite controlling.
OK,
so I'm not really happy that somebody would say, we'll give you loads of money, but we want 50%, 20%, 2% of your business.
And like, can we do this?
No,
this
it's my
this.
Party. I like running it the way I run it.
OK, the autonomy part then.
The autonomy part. I love. Yeah. So I've never looked for financial investors, and I've never had a mentor.
Okay.
It just never arose. I just never met anybody who mentored me. I suppose the closest I came to a mentor was years and years ago. My late mother had, I'm the eldest of four children.
Okay.
And she just honestly believed that her children could do anything.
Wow. Right,
so it wasn't
great.
Quite mentoring, but you could do anything. I was at a meeting during the week and this man was telling a story about he wanted to be an astronaut. And at the end of it, I said to him, I remember coming home one day and saying to my mother, I think I'd be an astronaut. And I was, I don't know, 10 or 11. And my mother's reaction was, an astronaut. Fantastic. You'll be the first astronaut from Ireland.
Oh, wow.
My daughter, an astronaut. And you'll be the first woman in space. Brilliant. She actually didn't know how to say to any of her children, you dope, you're never going to be an astronaut. And I think she was probably the best mentor that all four of us had, because none of us ever grew up with the belief that you couldn't do anything. Of course you could do it. If you decided you were going to start teaching courses in Africa, then it was only a case of when you're going to start teaching them.
Oh, that's actually really interesting, because that really builds into the whole self-belief. If you're told you couldn't do that, don't be so stupid. Who are you to think you could do that? That's just amazing that she was so inspiring and so like getting behind. Of course you can do anything. That's amazing. Yeah,
and it wasn't an arrogance. None of us are arrogant, but it was just, yeah. If I've got this figure that I can do, should we run it up a flagpole, as they say, and see who salutes? We'll try it anyway and see what happens. So I suppose in a sense, she was my mentor.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. Very inspiring. So what are the plans and what are the up and coming plans, if you can relay them? What's your strategy now going into 2015?
Oh, the strategy is to continue in the world domination mode that I'm in at the moment, basically.
Okay.
We actually have about 5 other contracts signed with different countries, which we haven't announced yet.
Wow.
Because they're at different stages and
okay.
we to get to the stage where it becomes public.
Yeah.
But we're spreading our wings quite a lot. So we're spreading our wings much more in South America. We're spreading into the Middle East and we're doing much more work in Europe. And we're also doing some work with Africa. It's frantically busy at the moment.
Yeah.
It's constantly changing. Every day is like one challenge after another. And it's the most almighty fun. You just can't beat it.
Okay, so how do you manage all that? Because there's so much going on. How do you keep on top of things?
I don't know. I just have that kind of a brain. I know my husband maintains that after about 3 minutes talking to him, he'll stop me and say, which country are we in now? Which Laura is that? Because there are like 10 different Lauras. I'm going, get with the plot. Concentrate. You know, I'm telling you this story here. But I think it's just I have that kind of a brain. That it just filters all these bits and bobs. And I am a bit of a control freak. I like being on top of everything. I have a team of 9 people and they all do different elements. I think of myself like an octopus. I'm the little body in the middle and you've all these legs going out. I couldn't function without all the legs, obviously, because I couldn't move.
Yeah.
But the little bit in the middle has to remember what all the legs are doing and make sure that the next bit gets done and gets moved along. And I suppose the other big challenge is not overstretching the people I have. Because
oh, right.
I'm perfectly happy doing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's my idea of heaven. But I'm very conscious that I actually have to reach a stage where I say to people, now, I know I've put too much pressure on, so just tell me which bit you're not going to do.
But that's great. That's great awareness. That's obviously sound like a very high in emotional intelligence that you're aware of that. At least you're able to pick
that
up on it. No, but at least I'd know from just working in the corporate world, I work with SMEs, etc. And I work with a lot of management teams. And it's interesting. Sometimes they don't. They just keep piling on the work. And then they get people they're getting stressed. And then there's all the disengage and all the other kind of things are going to, you know, negative impact of that heavy workload, but people not actually recognising that. So that's really good.
No, I'm very conscious that I've got really good people working with me. And I want them to stay working with me for the next 50 odd years. You know, unfortunately, they have to retire apparently at 65. It's the law. Otherwise, they could work with me if they were 75 or 85. But I actually want them to get as much. I'm very lucky that everybody enjoys their work as much as I do. And I want them to continue to enjoying it as much because I think we'll all.
But I'd say that's very much down to your management style of how you actually manage those individuals. By the sound of you're saying you're piling on the work, you know you are. And then you go, okay, what can you actually get done? That's just brilliant. It's lovely to hear. Very inspiring. I'm taking that story into the next management program I deliver. I don't always mention the names, but I definitely will say, I know this inspiring lady and how she manages people and this is how she does it. I have to say a big thank you, Ellen, for coming in this afternoon. I really appreciate it because my God, I didn't realise how busy you were until you just relayed all that information to me. So I really appreciate you giving up the time to come in the Learning Show and tell us what you're doing and how you got there.
It was a pleasure. Yeah. I was delighted that you asked me in.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. So thank you to you. Thank you to Mick Canley for doing sound. The contact email address is learningshow@dublincityfm.ie. We can be contacted also on Facebook, The Learning Show, /The Learning Show, Twitter at The Learning Show. Just watch out for those caps on the T, the L and the S. Tune in next week to learn tips and techniques to improve your working and personal lives. I'm Laura Fitzsimons and thank you for listening to The Learning Show on 103.2 Dublin City FM.